This podcast was originally recorded June 28th, 2020. Hello and welcome to SF3. Yes, SF3, a podcast featuring three men, all who have attained godhood, but with extremely minor godlike powers. Guys, what are your god powers?
Bureaucracy.
Okay.
I'm able to sometimes answer things in a semi-vague way and give an awesome answer that people pretty much can understand what I was saying.
That sounds awfully specific.
That sounds not true. But yes, people can understand you, sure.
What's your superpower?
My superpower is to be able to buy audio equipment even though I really don't need any.
Do you have any more to cast off?
Probably. Wait till I go through my room again.
Someone did tell me I needed a new mic.
You have a mic.
I do have a mic, but I could use a new one.
So anyway, this week we read Middle Game by Seanan McGuire, released 2019, which was narrated by Amber Benson of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, among other things.
Oh, really? Who did she play in Buffy?
Tara.
I never watched it.
Yes. No, she was one of the witches, Tara.
Oh, I still have no idea who it is since I didn't watch it.
I could keep on describing exactly who she was in this show you've never seen. Today on Insufferability, which is my real superpower.
She did do a good job in reading.
Yes, I agree. She definitely swung for the fences, I will say that much.
Well, she definitely went for voices.
Yes.
But I like it when I can't imagine the narrator's face while I'm listening to something because it's really distracting.
Very specific.
So it didn't sound to me like she was just using her regular, you know, everyday voice for everything is kind of what I'm saying.
You mean she's not, you know, some adolescent male from Boston?
I was confused.
So aren't we all. Anyway, speaking of which, yes, before we get further into reviews, let's do a reading from the back of the book. It's my turn this time. So, from the back of the book. Meet Roger, skilled with words. Languages come easily to him. He instinctively understands how the world works through the power of story. Meet Dodger, his twin. Numbers are her world, her obsession, her everything. All she understands, she does so through the power of math. Roger and Dodger aren't exactly human, though they don't realize it. They aren't exactly gods, either. Not entirely. Not yet. Meet Reed, skilled in the alchemical arts like his progenitor before him. Reed created Dodger and her brother. He's not their father. Not quite. But he has a plan. To raise the twins to the highest power. To ascend with them and claim their authority as his own. Godhood is attainable. Pray it isn't attained.
Sounds like an action flick.
Yeah, it somehow says a lot without saying a whole lot. Anyway, what did we think of the book? Kevin?
I quite enjoyed it. I will say that this has knocked off the previous Hugo winner for me. So we still have one book left to read, but so far this is my pick for the Hugo winner.
Okay. Excellent. Barry, what did you think?
Really enjoyed it. I like the local flavor, which kept it super interesting.
Yeah.
Yes. A lot of local stuff that, frankly, some of it I didn't even know about.
But, yeah. And the narrator did a great job. I'm kind of in the same boat with Kevin right now. This may be my Hugo pick if I were picking.
Yes. Before I give my review, the usual disclaimer. Like many people in Bay Area science fiction fandom, I knew Seanan McGuire when she was active in local fandom, before she became a popular author. Am I doing a disclaimer or am I name dropping? Both.
I thought the punchline was yes.
Oh, well, you spoiled the amazing effect that made it sound like I wasn't reading from the page, except it did sound like that.
The real answer is, why not both?
Why not both? Anyway, if Seanan McGuire were to write a bad novel, then I would say so. As usual, this was excellent. I think this was like the most complicated Seanan McGuire I've ever read. Normally, her plots have a lot of twists and turns to them, but this has the most complicated book structure, and I liked it. It reminded me a lot of, say, Tim Powers, or Cory Doctorow has a novel called Someone Comes to Town, someone leaves town, where there's a sort of undercurrent of showing that the underpinnings of our reality are just a lot weirder than we think it is.
Right. I kind of felt like if I didn't know who the author was and someone told me this was Neil Gaiman, I wouldn't be like, no, that's impossible. Like,
right. Yeah. It's definitely got a Neil Gaiman aspect. And there's a lot of self-referencing going on. And in an interesting way, we're only seeing a portion of the story. But in a good way, I kept on thinking, well, this is the grand finale, right? We've gotten to the fireworks factory. This is the big conflagration. And then, oh no, there's a lot left in this book. And then it would keep topping itself. So I really liked it.
It begins at the end, right?
Yeah.
End beginning, all the same. Yeah. I will say that we can go into it in the spoiler section since there are easy spoilers to drop here, but initially it reminded me of her indexing stuff, but like at another level kind of. It's evolved and, you know, like you said, it's definitely a more complicated plot and I really love those books and this one I loved, you know, even more. So hopefully there will be more books, at least more books from her, if not more books in this series.
Yes, hopefully there will be more books in general, more books from Seanan, and more books in this series.
We don't know if any of these are true with COVID and so forth, but yes. You know, we'll see.
It's currently July of 2020, or as we call it now, the before times.
Yes.
This is called 2020, but we're only halfway through.
Yes.
Just keeps on swinging.
Okay, guys. Oh, just a second. Yeah, well,
yeah, hey, it's your first yourself. Time to wrap it up.
Oh, now?
Yeah. But time travel gag.
Oh, whatever. Okay, fine.
Yeah, thanks. Bye.
Okay, so I just got a phone call saying it's time to move to this discussion section. We shall return, for we are SF3.
333.
So welcome back to our discussion section, where we will discuss in a whole spoilery way everything that was going on in Middle Game. By the way, Middle Game is a chess term, and I don't even know if they talk about it in the book. In chess, there's the End Game, which everybody is talking about.
It's an Avengers game.
Yes, it's also most popularly known as a fun movie with people in colorful costumes. But
so don't most competitions have what's considered a middle game if there's more than 5 minutes of competition, you know, in like tic-tac-toe or something?
I mean, technically, yes.
There's the pregame, there's the opening game, there's the middle game, there's the end game.
Now, I was trying to figure out how the title fit into the book, and I did come up with something that made perfect sense, but I don't remember what it was anymore. But
it's Midwich.
Midwich. I assume that it has to do with Dodger and her chess playing.
Yeah.
In some ways, this is the extended middle of the book. In some ways, we don't really see the beginning because of all the time travel. And I'm not sure we really see the end because of all the time travel. So,
was there really any time traveling?
Well, I mean, time erasure.
Yes. Resetting.
Time
reset. Yes, time reset.
I would still term it time travel. But
well, then why did you ask me that?
The expert has spoken on the vagueness.
We made a mistake. Well, reset the timeline.
Yes, we started a podcast several years ago.
This also reminded me mildly of Live, Die, and Repeat, right?
Yes. Now, it's rather difficult to handle a book that can do restoring from a save point because it could very easily become a power fantasy. The characters really do have very amazing superpowers. And one of the things that impressed me about it was that Seanan MacGuire manages to keep this from becoming a triumphant romp where the heroes get their superpowers and get whatever they want immediately. At the same time, it often in books where people have superpowers and they don't use them, it becomes really frustrating. And I was impressed also by the fact that she was able to keep the characters going in that very careful middle ground where I wasn't just saying, well, why don't you just use your powers and make everything okay?
Right. They don't even know they have powers most of the time, but it still is satisfying.
Yes. Roger doesn't understand that he can just tell anyone to do whatever he wants and they'll do it. And he never does that because he's a nice person that sort of understands that, oh, well, normally when he explains things, well, then he gets what he wants. But he just sort of says, well, I'm good at explaining things. He doesn't really ever grasp that he has God powers.
Yeah, I would have thought that a kid would have figured this out pretty early on. You know, it's like, I want a peanut butter sandwich, or I want chicken nuggets, and I don't want to eat my vegetables.
One big thing is that they kind of emphasize that he doesn't have powers until he manifests, and it takes a while to kind of come into the power.
Yeah. Yes. There's definitely a puberty thing going on there.
Indeed. But it is interesting that this is a novel where they can communicate with their own past timeline and interfere with their own past timeline. I think it handles the save points very adeptly. Did you guys have feelings about that?
Yeah, I think you're right that it could have been incredibly confusing as to what was happening. And instead, it was like actually a very good like framing device.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with the first page of the book, she was building up to the climax, basically.
Sure.
You see the repeated, like, there's so much blood, you know, scene.
Yeah, I remember the first time I came across that particular passage, I had to listen to it a few times because I thought I had missed something, but it actually was, you know, in audiobook format, right? It's basically just another chapter that starts sort of without warning.
Right.
That is the downside to audiobooks, is we don't get the fact that it's probably in something like italics or something like that.
Right.
Yeah, it was a nice, long, slow burn.
Mm-hmm.
I think the whole save point thing became super obvious to me once Roger found the objects that were in his sort of hidey hole in his room, that hidden cubby right. underneath the baseboard, and there were objects in there that he didn't remember putting there. It was clearly he had put them there because it was like a drawing of him and Dodger standing someplace or something, but he couldn't remember drawing it.
Right, and Aaron calls, and he's like, why are you calling on Dodger's phone? And and she's like, you need to reset the timeline. He's like, what? She's like, just tell him to do it. And he's like, why? He's like, well, you must have done it last time because we're still here. I think that the time travel was dealt with very effectively. And also with the resets, you don't know when there's going to be a reset. There's lots of tension because you don't know whether they're going to be able to reset it when they need to.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just like, oh, you know, they'll just reset it if they mess it up. Like, you know, it's like, well, we don't know that that's actually going to happen. It doesn't have, like you said, the superpower overpower problem.
Right.
So I guess this kind of comes into the review that I would have given in the review section, except it was too spoilery, was that please just put Shauna Maguire as the showrunner for Doctor Who. Or at least write some episodes. I think this shows a glorious grasp of time travel and, you know, tension that can be used with it.
It would be interesting to see a Shauna Maguire Doctor Who, that's for sure. This also features one in a very long line of imaginary books. So a lot of the chapters start with a narration of these two kids that are in a similar circumstance to what Roger and Dodger are doing.
Right.
For a long time, I was just like, okay.
Who's a Zib kid?
Yeah, what's going on here? I figured out it was some kind of children's book, but it took me a while to figure out that this was actually written by Asphodel, the teacher of Reed, the evil alchemist who created Roger and Dodger.
Well, she created Reed, right?
Yes, exactly. So she created Reed, who created Roger and Dodger, and she also apparently moonlighted as a children's book author. But
right. A. Deborah Baker. It's interesting because it's like you were saying, where it's like the fillery books, this book, it was like books that I wish existed that didn't, you know.
Right.
It was interesting that the way it was dealt with here was rather than saying, oh, like the Oz books didn't exist or something, that they were kind of meant as a attack against these books because essentially the books were written with that whole concept of belief causes psychic things to happen.
So if you really do believe that Where the Wild Things Are happened, then it's true.
Trust me, it's happening right now.
There's lots of books that have done this, right? You know, it's not like it's even just in books. If enough people believe something, then it's true, or it might as well be true because people act like it is. So it's almost a recursive thing too, because this book itself is obviously popular enough to be on the Hugo list. So it's making its own narratives, so to speak.
Right. So eventually, like, Shauna Maguire will simply become God.
I'm sure that's the plan all along. And apparently, she is writing Over the Woodward Wall now, that's going to be released under the pen name A. Deborah Baker.
That's not just the name of a sequel or something like that.
I think it's actually not. I think it's supposed to be, you know, one of the books in the original series of A. Deborah Baker's books.
This is how you create an object that's temporarily immune.
Avery and Zib. I kind of guessed fairly quickly what Over the Woodward Wall's place in the book was, but I didn't connect it to Asphodel very quickly.
Yeah, there's an anime called Monster, where there's a children's book that bears a similar relationship to the narrative, where everything that's happening in the book also has a parallel in this children's book.
Sort of never-ending story-like.
Kind of, yes. Okay, so favorite scenes.
I think my favorite scene was probably like the reconstruction of the fire at the lab at the university. The way that Dodger sort of goes through and calculates, you know, the volume of everything and sort of on the fly and the perimeters and, you know, the flammability of all the objects and kind of figures out this wasn't an accident, but this is exactly how it went down and everything. For some reason, I really like that. I mean, that sort of was like a tangent, right? It's like there was a fire at Santa Cruz when I was going, just before I got there.
So what you're saying is you have an alibi.
I do have an alibi. I was not at that university yet.
It did have a very Sherlock feel to it on that scene.
Then again, I've heard you talk enough about time crimes that I pretty much assume that you're responsible for all the crimes.
I have an alibi for all of them.
Yes.
Yourself.
Yeah, it's that other guy. Remember, I'm a triplet.
Yeah, yes.
Kevin, did you have a favorite scene?
Yeah, I think probably the one that stands out was just the very short segment where Lee is coming after Dodger. At the end, she's painted with the runes, and Lee, we know, is almost indestructible, and she's sort of, the readers know it's a bucket of Alkahest, you know, the universal solvent. Dodger just thinks it's water. It was one of those things where just in like two or three sentences, it calls forth this narrative concept of, there's a history of girls who are cornered who throw liquids on witches.
Yes.
An alchemist is just another name for a witch or vice versa.
So it's a narrative outbreak.
Right. It says her hands were guided by all the Dorothys before her. So in a way, she's sort of hearkening back to the narrative novels, which I was kind of wondering if that was in the same universe or not. Or it was just a cool thing, one of the two.
Is that the difference between the narrative and the doctrine?
Yeah, that's what I was wondering.
Maybe not the difference, but like the recollection, right? We're all familiar with the narrative element, but here it's just called the doctrine because it's a different timeline.
Well, that's what I was trying to figure out, is like, is the doctrine a different thing than the narrative, or is it just a different name?
Well, in some ways, it's actually the inverse, right? Because the narrative really controlled a lot of the other characters versus here where the doctrine or someone's actually trying to control it as a tool.
Right. I get the impression that the doctrine is like kind of like the building blocks underneath the narrative.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, favorite scenes. Back to that for a minute. My favorite scene was the shootout at the end where Roger manages to avoid being shot by just yelling miss at the gun. And I think it was like specifically mentioned, he wasn't just shouting miss at the person shooting at him, but at the bullet itself.
Right. And like it said early on that, you know, he could command the universe and it would obey if he knew how to say it right. It made me think of that one, the Luck Virus episode in Red Dwarf.
Yes, from Red Dwarf.
And that's probably my favorite episode of Red Dwarf. There's a couple in there, but I'm a sucker for anything like that, you know, where it's like you have control of the narrative in some way. In fact, I was actually thinking earlier, in fact, in the bucket scene, he actually tries to intervene at some point. But it actually said because, you know, Lee was sort of like the evil witch of his childhood, you know, threatened to take him away from his parents and stuff.
Right.
He just yelled stop, I think. Mm-hmm. It said he didn't actually think it would work, and that's basically why it didn't work.
Right.
So it actually made me think of like The Exorcist, because that was like a huge theme in the book anyway.
Right. You have to really believe it. You can't just go through the motions.
Right.
Okay. Let's see. Our usual questions. Was there tea? I'll admit that I didn't do my usual search for tea in the book. I don't remember if they had any tea or not. I don't know if any of the others of us remember.
I don't believe that there was tea.
Okay, no tea, no tea.
A mild strike against the book.
I want to say that there was tea, but that's, again, based on just a vague feeling.
Exactly.
So I'm willing to believe either way.
Okay, well, this is important and essential, and I glory in it. What character would you want to be, and or who would you be?
I would have to be Dodger, I think.
Okay.
Well, I always wanted to be like this uber math genius when I was younger, and I still wish I was like an uber math genius, even though that's not my, you know, I like math, but I'm not like super deep into math, so.
Yes, I would prefer being Roger, I think, although I don't think I could be trusted once I understood that people would do whatever I said.
Yeah, I think I'm going to have to go with Roger myself.
Yeah,
well.
But I'm very worried as to what would happen.
Oh, nothing good, that's for sure.
Well, if I'm Dodger and Steve's Roger, then you could be Reed, the evil genius guy behind everything.
But I don't win in the end.
Maybe in one of the timelines you do. Actually, no, so this is the other thing I wanted to bring up is you should be Asphodel, because remember at the very beginning, she's making Reed, and she says, "You will rise up against me, and you will fulfill what I couldn't do," and kind of implied that he'd be doing all this for her benefit eventually later on, like she would kind of come back into the picture somehow.
It's kind of Star Wars-y.
It is a little Star Wars-y, yes. But yeah, I guess that would also work, Asphodel, but, you know, I'm just going to stick with Roger. Just getting people to do what I want.
That does sound apropos.
And new usual question, is this a good quarantine read?
I think it makes a good shelter-in-place book.
Of all the Hugo nominations that we've read so far, I would say it's probably the only one that's really a good...
Yeah, I mean,
book.
It's a power fantasy of sorts. It involves changing the past, which we're all desperately trying to do right now.
Yes, rewind.
It does involve wandering around the San Francisco Bay Area, which is what we can't do right now.
That's true.
Oh, yes. That was actually one of my favorite parts was the grand finale takes place in the Sutro Baths, and I've been right next to that place many times. That's just north of Ocean Beach, so it's right next to CorgiCon, so where... My dogs and I have been a few times, and Barry has been at least once.
At least once, maybe more, who knows?
Yes.
I don't have a corgi, but maybe I rented one for the weekend.
But yes, it seemed pretty clear that that was there just because Shannon had at some point heard about or visited the ruins of the place and fell in love with them.
Yeah, it is always fun. There aren't too many books. I guess the zombie books that she did, but... it's always cool to have stuff take place and stuff that you recognize or at least know of. If like, I've never been up to the Sutro Bath area that I know of, but
yes, if you've been to Ocean Beach, then there's a decent chance.
Yeah,
it's right next to the Chart House.
Yes, that was the name I was trying to think of earlier. Was the Chart House where you could eat lunch? And actually, I think there's like a big set of windows you could eat overlooking the Sutro remains.
Yes, and yeah, I've eaten there, and I don't think I ever understood what I was looking at.
Yeah, I really did like that scene too, with just anything like that where it's like calling it into existence, you know, based on, you know, belief and like a little bit of like tangible like thread that you can pull on. Like,
yes.
You know, it also took it like in a completely fantastic direction where they're basically running around in what the Sutro Baths used to be, right? Where the stairs are, they're following Dodger because she knows, you know, mathematically where everything is supposed to be, and so she can just run upstairs and things like that.
Indeed.
I thought it was cool.
Right. Indeed. And then that one section where, you know, like, you know, with the multiple save points, that was kind of one of the points, and I sometimes wonder whether the book was written as, like, these are alternate versions, and then, like, well, we'll use this one, and this one will go into a, you know... a variation chapter, you know, with one of the alternate ones, but where he runs in and he's like, hey, just, you know, can you just make the bad guys like, you know, make the floor disappear under them or something? And she's kind of like, yeah, but not for, you know, I don't have the time to do it for everybody. I'll just make the entire floor disappear.
Anyway. Okay. It's time to wrap this up, guys, because I need to make a phone call right now. Anyway, until the next episode, we are
SF3.
Yeah, hey, it's your fruit yourself. Time to wrap it up.
Oh, now?
Yeah, otherwise you do a stupid time travel gag.
Oh, whatever. Okay, fine.
Yeah, thanks. Bye.